This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Well, greetings once again to everybody at TFMR. Hey, guess what? It's time for your latest Thursday conversation. It's Thursday, October 21st. My guests and I are actually recording this on Wednesday, October 20th. That doesn't really matter. This is some great information you are going to want to hear. The first time we had Tom Luongo on was, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago, maybe. We were talking about Basel III and European Central Bank and some of the other central banks. It was a great conversation. And the feedback I got was universally positive. Have Tom on again. And so here's Tom again. And what's fun about Tom, Tom was, I guess we'll call him one of the original Turdites, and that Tom was a regular on the site back in the old Watchtower days and even in the early stages of the own our own website. And so many of you will recall Tom being around back then. And so it's just great to see everything he's doing now, sharing all of his information, all of his opinions. His like I said, his newsletter is called Gold, Goats, and Guns. You can find it at the website Tom Luongo, LUONGO.ME. Of course, those links are on this page. So we're going to make it easy on you. Anyway, that long introduction, Tom, thanks so much, man. It's great to talk to you again.
It's great to be here, Craig. No, thanks for the invite, as always. And let's get to it.
Let's hit it, man. I'm going to put a link on this page. Folks, you know, if you check the weekend threads regularly, you'll find I subbed this in as a comment back over there this past weekend. So you may have missed it. But it was a great article that Tom wrote, got picked up by Zero Hedge. Had to do, I guess, as you wrote it, Tom, the ECB or the EU takes the express elevator to hell. Mm-hmm. Now, I think this ties in what we talked about last time, because we talked about Basel III and, you know, why is this happening now and what's going on? And, you know, the implication of these standards finally on the all the global banks. And you said, you told us, man, the ECB is particularly trapped because all they, you know, they can't stop printing euro. They got to keep buying bonds. They can't let rates go up or they'll have to mark their $9 trillion portfolio to market and it'll be insolvent. So I think a lot of these things fit together with your current piece. So that piece is linked here, but don't read it. Listen to Tom. Tom, tell us what's currently on your mind with all this.
Well, what I'm seeing, Craig, and the genesis for the piece that we're talking about was a great article by Alistair Crook over at Strategic Culture Foundation, where he was going over the situation between NATO and the shift from NATO from the Americans' perspective to AUKUS, Australia, UK, US, new alliance that blindsided the European Union. And in Crook's inimical fashion, because he's incredibly good with the kind of civilizational war aspects of everything that happens in geopolitics, that he made the point that the EU was effectively, and Europe was effectively now abandoned, that after 60 years of being built up by the US to be the kind of regulatory arm of the Atlanticist, for lack of a better term, hegemony, right? The US is the military and financial arm of the Western global power structure, centered around all of the Western institutions like the IMF and the BIS and all those alphabet soup agencies. Mm-hmm. Then the European Union was meant to be the technocratic enforcer of all the standards. Right. But that doesn't work if you don't have the military and the financial backing. So I run under this thesis that there's this organization loosely called Davos, and it's a very loose organization. And I like to, and since it's, you know, the latest James Bond movie is out, this is the closest thing to Spectre we'll ever get. Right. But it, and understand that Davos is a shorthand for just the whole impetus towards kind of Western globalism. Right, Western dominated globalism. It's not like the Chinese don't want some form of their own globalism, but this using that as a shorthand to understand that they have an agenda. That agenda is very clear, which is that their goal is to use the European Union as the fulcrum on which they're going to institute their version of the technocratic superstate. And I facetiously every once in a while call it the EU-SSR. And I'm not really being facetious when I say that, because the, you know, as Alexander Mercurius over at Duran likes to point out to me a long time ago, he said, Tom, the USSR was always a technocratic institution. That's what it, that's how it operated. So the EU operating in the same kind of technocratic managerial way is absolutely accurate to call them just the latest version of the USSR's technocratic, you know, institution. So, but with the formation of AUKUS, the United States is now fundamentally undergoing a shift. And it, I think that everything ties back to what I was talking about when you and I first chatted, which was right after the Biden-Putin summit and the Fed changed monetary policy and began tightening by raising reverse repo payout rates from 0% to 5 basis points, which has exploded that facility from around $450 billion to what, about $1.6 trillion as we, yep, some give or take of $50 or $60 billion between friends, right? Yeah. So, you know, this is where we are today. And that's $1.2 trillion worth of tightening, right? That's already occurred. So I find it really funny. Everybody's like worried that they're going to raise rates. But the thing is that as you pointed out in the intro, in the setup, which I appreciate, which is that the European Union is trapped. The ECB is trapped because the ECB doesn't have the ability to print money. All the ECB can do is buy debt and then allow the member central banks like Italy or Portugal or Spain or whatever to, they issue debt to create new euros. The ECB, all they can do is soak up the supply and manage the supply of European sovereign debt. But if European sovereign debt falls in value by seeing rates rise, well, then they have to mark their holdings down to market. And the only way, of course, for them to offset that is for them to allow the price of gold to rise, which is how it ties back into Basel III, as we chatted about back over the summer. So now let's think this through one step further, right? We're in this position now where the European Union has been told by the United States, look, we're depreciating NATO. It's on an accelerated depreciation curve. Within 10 years, we're not even going to be involved in it anymore. And I really do believe that. And I believe that Victoria Nuland was sent to Moscow after we begged them for the meeting, the same way we begged them for the Biden-Putin summit, to say, look, okay, yeah, fine, we get it. We can't win this war. Can we somehow sue for some form of peace with Russia? Because we're realigning all of our foreign policy objectives with China, right? And Lloyd Austin just touched down in Kiev and made some, you know, virtue signaling speech about how, you know, we stand with our Ukrainian brothers and all this nonsense. No, he's going there to tell Zelensky, you know, get over yourself, cut a deal with Putin, because the Minsk agreements are the only way forward for you. And that's a fundamental shift in U.S. policy. At the same time all of this is happening, what have we seen in Europe over the last couple of weeks since the German elections? Well, we have German elections that have going to give us the most leftist government the Germans have had since before World War II. The Czechs had an election where the existing prime minister, the sovereigntist Babiš, won, but didn't win because it was Babiš versus the anti-Babiš coalition. The president, Miloš Zeman, said, well, he's going to get first refusal to form a government. What happened at that meeting between the two of them? Miloš Zeman somehow falls sick and ill and has been replaced as president of the Czech Republic. Okay. Same week, Sebastian Kurz is thrown out of office and steps down in Austria. This morning, the most consequential headline of the morning is not Bitcoin running to an all-time high, but Jens Weidmann, the head of the Bundesbank in Germany, stepped down, citing personal reasons. Yeah, those personal reasons are Davos just threatened his wife and children.
I had no idea. I didn't see that at all today.
Yeah, it was on Zero Hedge this morning. The first time I'm like, oh, yep. There, that's Weidmann stepped down five years early. And it's because, and nominally, it's because obviously the incoming German government is going to be at odds with him, which tells you that the Free Democrats, who would have been the fiscal conservatives of this new coalition, have pretty much rolled over. And so we're going to get a German government that is going to, and a Bundesbank that is going to rubber stamp the conversion of the European Union into an MMT style, you know, technocratic nightmare with, you know, scrip for their currency. The euro is now doomed. These are the big takeaways. It's like 10 minutes for me to say, oh, by the way, yeah, the euro is doomed.
Well, Tom, I want to ask you something as a follow-up to that, because we've seen, obviously, I mean, the Banana Republic stuff, you know, about Rosengren and Kaplan trading spoos, you know, on Fed policy days. Well, then you had this leak that came out through not Mother Jones, but some other far left website. About Powell's trades this week.
Right.
And the thought being, you know, they're just teeing him up to get rid of him to replace him with Brainard. It sounds like the same thing.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely the same thing. So they got rid of Weidmann at the Bundesbank. I'm just waiting for them. I don't know that they have any control over the Swiss Central Bank, the SNB, but the SNB has been turned into a hedge fund anyway, so it really doesn't matter. So now you've got they've been after Powell now for 2 months, and they got rid of Rosengren and Kaplan. They almost got rid of the third guy. I don't remember
Chlamydia. I call him.
Nice. And now they're absolutely trying to go after Powell. The other big question is, Craig, and this has been in my head for now months, right? Which is the following. Is there a functional split between the Federal Reserve and the Biden administration? I think there is. And I think it's been there since the day of the Biden-Putin summit when Powell came out and raised the RRP rate by 5 basis points. I think it also shows that, you know, when we see Tether get a slap on the wrist from the CFTC earlier in the week, opening the door to Bitcoin to go through an all-time high. Wall Street wants crypto, and Davos absolutely doesn't want crypto. Gary Gensler and Janet Yellen are the ones that inserted all that terrible language into the bills that Pelosi can't get passed. So the fight now for the fate of literally of the world boils down to two things in my mind right now. One, whether or not Powell can survive and get reappointed, one. And two, if these stupid bills, that the money is irrelevant. The money is the headline distraction. It's the changes to the way we're going to tax and regulate the economy that is of the United States, which is the key. Because the whole purpose of those bills is to make the U.S. anti-competitive on the world stage. Because the goal here of Davos is to foment a war with between the United States and China, while making Europe the best destination for global capital under that circumstance, circa 2024 through 2025, 2026. That's what I'm seeing. And every one of these moves is based on this. And so what happens today with these infrastructure and spending bills and these budgets, the stuff that Pelosi is dead set. Notice she said the other day that, you know, none of the regulations are up for negotiation, only the money.
Yeah.
Okay. So that tells you where she's getting her, what the real directives are. If those bills continue to die and they don't actually get done before the midterms, which I doubt is going to happen. I expect them to get passed at some point, unfortunately. But if Powell keeps draining the world of dollars, he's putting the EU behind the eight ball. And what have we seen? The euro closed Q3 below $1.16, which was a massive, massive technical breakdown.
Yeah,
I mean, from a technical chart, from a chartist perspective, 115.8 on the euro was bad, right? And so it's headed to $1.04 if they don't get rid of Powell. And what's that going to do to German bond yields? So one of the things I've been saying, and I haven't seen it play out yet, and I've been right and wrong about this multiple times when it comes to German bonds, but you can tell that everybody starts getting really nervous when the 10-year German bund U.S. Treasury spread starts to approach 1.6%. Then everybody starts freaking out. The headlines get really weird, and the ECB goes into like buying overload mode. It usually happens on a Friday. So watch that spread, because I think, I don't know for what reason it is. I just noticed in looking at the data for the last 5 years, or the last 3 or 4 years, that every time we get anywhere close to 1.6% spread between the German Bund and the U.S. Treasury of the similar maturity, but let's use the benchmark 10-year as the best way to look at this, they start freaking out. So obviously there must be something where there's going to be a complete unwind of somebody's trade structurally within the market, which is going to cause that to, which is going to cause the German bunds to start selling bad quickly. And then the whole thing starts to unravel. The euro drops like a stone, yada, yada, yada. So yeah, I mean, this is the way I've been looking at the markets for the last couple of weeks now. And this is what I've been waiting for. I'm waiting for the next shoe to drop to see how that plays out. So,
all right. Well, two things that kind of go off of that. Mm-hmm. One is this idea. I was discussing this back on Tuesday during my daily podcast. I mean, you've already got the Atlanta Fed now has the third quarter GDP all the way down at just 0.5 from had been 6. Thought it was read it just 2 months ago in August. Yep. So we're getting into the stag part of the stagflation. and you know, the supply shortages and supply chains, you know, and everything that goes with it. And, you know, and these central bankers are always reactive instead of proactive anyway, Tom. So I guess gold looks and silver look like they're beginning to anticipate this, but is Powell now kind of, I mean, is he fighting the last fight basically?
I think he's fighting the next fight. That's what I think is going on here. I think he's honestly fighting Davos.
Okay.
He's fighting the EU with this. And that's why he's been steadfast. Look at what he's done, Craig. I don't know if I outlined it with you the last time I was on the show or not, but think about this. Earlier in the year, I think it was in March, they raised the reverse repo facility limit that any counterparty can go, can belly up and buy, right? From 30 billion to 80 billion. Money markets are still pegged at zero. In June, he raises the reverse repo facility rate to 5 basis points in order to not have nominal negative yields in the U.S. money markets, because that would be bad. Then the next week he raises, and then after that, then he creates the foreign repo facility to now have fine control over the international flow of dollars into and out of the country, right? And then he raises the facility limit for each counterparty to $160 billion at the September meeting, right?
Right.
So is he getting ready to, he's anticipating another drop to 0%, or he's trying to stave off another drop to 0% in the US money markets. He's trying to stuff our banks full of collateral in order to keep them alive when Europe implodes. He knows exactly what he's doing. And I think this is actually a very subtle and astute way to fight. I mean, can you see Jamie Dimon turning around and going, oh yeah, we're going to move the center of the global capital to Frankfurt? Yeah, no, I just don't buy that. Like, I don't buy Wall Street rolling over and allowing a bunch of German eugenicists to set monetary policy for the world. I just don't buy it. I buy them wanting to have that, retain that power. And Powell being a private equity guy, he's not a Janet Yellen. He's not or a Ben Bernanke. He's not an ivory tower academic, and he's not an ideologue. If he's an ideologue of anything, he's an ideologue. Like, he still believes nominally in free markets for as much as a central banker actually can, and for a Keynesian to actually do so. But I don't think he's not one of these people, and that's why they want to get rid of him. And it seems very clear to me. And I just think, I look at Wall Street going, okay, so your goal is to destroy the commercial banks, roll all the money transmission directly up to the central banks, and then leave Apple, Google, and Facebook as the remnants of the old, you know, payment layer system that we used to have. And we're going to cut the commercial banks out. Like, can you see JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, and the rest of these guys rolling, and the Bank of Scotland and the rest of them all rolling over for this? Like, really? I'm thinking no. And that's why I'm looking at this going, yeah, it makes perfect sense that they would be instructing Powell to fight back once they finally saw what the big deal is. And that's why I said that Davos is a very loose collection of people. And at one point, the Western bankers were on board, whether the U.S. bankers, New York bankers were on board with this. Why? They were sold the pig in the poke that they were going to get, you know, they were going to get to be able to, you know, put their coal boots up and collect their rent and still book run all these silly deals and, you know, for carbon credits and all the rest of it. And then the real plan got revealed during COVID. And they're like, oh, no, that's not going to fly. And I honestly think that that's what happened. And it's because there's been a fundamental shift in policy over the last 4 months that screams that there's something going on here.
Yeah.
So.
Well, let's do this, Tom, in our remaining couple of minutes. Whatever it was back in, I mean, it's been maybe 4 months since we spoke.
Right.
We've got a little more than 4 months less than 4 months for the end of the year. We're going to keep in touch. I can promise everybody that.
Please.
I'm curious to see how you fit this in. I want to know what are some signs we're going to watch for? What are some things you'll be watching for in the weeks and, you know, really weeks ahead?
Yeah.
As this is changing. And one of the things I've really got my eye on is this high natural gas prices. You know, this Nord Stream 2 is not online yet. You talk about U.S. kind of suing for peace.
Right.
In Ukraine, man, I really fear it's going to be a long, cold, brutally and deadly winter, and that's going to have some geopolitical implications in Europe. Anyway, tie all that in for us and let us know what you think we need to watch.
Well, I've been looking at the natural gas price the last couple of weeks going, when the minute it spiked over $6, I'm like, okay, there's some Soros-backed Momo monkeys in there playing games. That's the first thing I thought. And then we got a double top at 6.5, and now we're back down below 5. I think we're going to get a move back to $4 in natural gas. I think we're going to retest the long-term, you know, $4 Maginot line that natural gas tends to want to go back towards, right? I mean, you go look at a 15 or 20 year chart of natural gas, you know, that $4 level is usually the big one. And anytime we get above that, it's usually some kind of exogenous event, right? So okay. Now the question is whether or not this is structural. And I think I'm watching to see if we do get a move back towards $4, right? If we don't, then it's telling us that we do have a real structural problem in natural gas. Nord Stream 2 is going to go through. And even if it doesn't, the Russians don't care. The Russians have told everybody, they've told everybody, look, we can fill the pipeline and we can build it and then we can shut it off because we're making so much money, we don't care. You guys begged us for the pipeline. So if you want it, these are our terms.
Yeah.
That's simple. So they're going to get Nord Stream 2 through. And the way they'll do it is that Rosneft will get an export license for natural gas, breaking Gazprom's quote unquote monopoly on gas export. And through Russia, which the EU never expected, Rosneft has already asked Putin for this. And Putin's basically, you know, relayed that message to the EU. Oh, by the way, we don't have to unbundle the pipeline. We can just have Rosneft supply 50% of the gas. So, you know, take your third EU energy directive and shove it. That's the first thing. So at some point, the gas is going to flow to Europe. Germany will then have, now we'll have, Germany will have nearly complete control over the internal distribution of gas throughout the European Union, which was the whole point of Nord Stream 2 from their perspective in the first place, not just to make up their deficit, but then to bring the Poles in line because the Poles refused to come to their senses and cut a deal with the Russians. Because the Poles still fundamentally hate Russians to the point of their own suicide, to be honest with you. It's like they're committing geopolitical harakiri here. I've been screaming at the Poles for 2 years now. Cut a deal with Putin. He'll be happy to sell you gas independently of Germany. Mm-hmm. They won't do it. They just rolled over this week. So on the constitutional court issue. So I'm going to be watching for more of the geopolitical stuff is going to tell me what's going to happen in the markets. But the markets are also going to probably give me that early warning signal. And I'm going to be watching the German US 10-year spread. I'll be watching natural gas prices, obviously. And I'll be watching gold and silver carefully as well, because there's something going on in the industrial metals market. I don't know if you saw this, Last week, like, we saw 25% jumps across the board in all the industrial metals, from aluminum to tin to nickel to copper, everything. Silver finally had to play, you know, had to finally play some catch up. They finally had to let their foot off its neck for an afternoon or two. Silver's not interesting until it gets above 26, by the way. So a move above 26 in silver tells us silver's interesting again. And then gold, we need a close this week above $1,800, and we need it this week. If we don't get a close above $1,800 this week, they're still completely in control of the gold market. It's very clear. Go look at the weekly chart. It's very clear.
Oh, geez. All the massive red candles on the daily chart.
Yeah, well, it's all the high tails on the top of the every Friday, gold comes in looking good. And then Friday morning, they come in and bomb it. $35, $25, $30 or whatever. Bomb it into the and paint the tape on the weekly close. That's what they've been doing. You know, so it's not tough, right? I mean, especially last week was particularly egregious. So, these are the things I'm watching for. And there's going to be a headline that's going to spring out, and it's going to say, okay, there we are. And that's the key. And like this Wyden thing this morning was the big one to me. And then, you know, and just so that everybody doesn't, I don't like, it's not all doom and gloom. I think these moves are being made out of desperation, not out of control. Okay. And the vaccine passports, the mandates, everything else. Look, Italy could actually, you know, depose Draghi in the next couple of months.
Yeah.
Right. They could throw him out of office. Like, they could drag him out of the Italian Senate and, you know, and beat him to death on the, you know, on the sidewalk.
Hanging from
like, it's not like Italians aren't, you know, capable of this. So if that were to happen, you know, everything changes, because without Italy, they don't have an EU. They don't even have a small France-centered EU, while the Germans and the Eastern Europeans, you know, are let loose, right? I mean, that's always a possibility. the political changes that have happened in the last couple of weeks with Germany and the Czech Republic and the rest of that tell me that they're making their big move to try and keep the current EU together, but it's still being torn apart in both directions because half of them need inflation and half of them need deflation. So,
right. Dude, it's just a fascinating time.
It is.
I mean, it's not fun necessarily. It's not necessarily scary, but it's a little alarming from time to time. But it's a fascinating time to watch all this stuff going on. And clearly keeps you busy, keep track of it all.
It is. And it's both exhausting and kind of inspiring because I see how people are fighting this and I get it. And we're doing the right thing. Ultimately, and then we're going to win this fight, but it's going to be ugly and it's going to cost a lot of people their lives. And there's no doubt here that they're going to try and foment the war. And because that's the last thing, and it's the last refuge they have. So, I just hope that we never gets to that, but they've already turned the corner. They've gone from cajoling us and bribing us with fake money to now demanding that we get a vaccine or we can't have our life. Okay, we're at that point. All right, those are the terms now. All right, now let's get serious about who's actually got the power in this world.
Yeah.
And we're going to find out who actually has the power. And I, of course, believe the people have the power.
So Tom, obviously you think about this stuff, extremely valuable having you on our side. Mm-hmm. The Gold, Goats, and Guns newsletter, you can sign up for that at your website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can. I publish it through Patreon because it's the best platform for what I do.
Yeah,
and there's a link right there on the right sidebar, so you can go from there if you like.
I mean, crying out loud! I mean, we need as many people like you on our side helping us see. I mean, I can't keep track of it all, so everybody, please check it out. Again, the link here on this page, and it's just Tom Luongo, luongo.me. Tom, can't wait to talk. Well, I guess I can. It's God knows what the world's going to look like. By the next time we
talk. Fair enough, Greg. Give me a call whenever you can. I've always got 20 minutes for you.
Dude, I very much appreciate it. And so anyway, thanks again. I appreciate it.
Yeah, have a great week.
And everybody, thanks for listening. We'll have another Thursday conversation next week.